Tanya 200. We're up to chapter 47 of Tanya. To review chapter 46 briefly, the Rebbe introduced the idea of reciprocal love, meaning that it is the nature of the heart to reflect back the love that is shown to it. And so if we consider the love that God has shown us, it is inevitable, almost involuntary, that we reciprocate, and that in our own heart we experience a return love for God. Where did God show his love? In the Exodus, in taking us out of Egypt. And the Rebbe gives this whole lengthy description about a king who comes to a person who is filthy and dirtied in an unholy, unclean place, and he takes him out of there and takes him to the palace, and there shares with him an embrace and a kiss, merging with him on a very intimate personal level. God himself came down to Egypt to take us out of Egypt when Egypt was a very unholy place, took us from there to Mount Sinai, to his palace, and he is the King of Kings. And in the palace at Mount Sinai, he reveals to us the commandments and the teachings of the Torah, the commandments being the embrace, because the mitzvah embraces us with godliness, and the study of Torah being the kiss, where we are saying the words that God said, that contain the breath of God, which is the meaning of the intimacy of a kiss, which is the merging of breath and breath, breath to breath. Now, every time we do a mitzvah, we experience this exodus from Egypt, in that in the doing of the mitzvah, we are being lifted out of our ungodly condition and being taken into the godliness of the King of Kings, of God himself. But we don't always feel it. We seldom feel it. When we're doing the mitzvah, we are not conscious. We don't experience that closeness or that intimacy in our conscious mind and heart. And that's because, unlike the patriarchs, we are not refined enough, we're not sensitive enough to appreciate the connectedness, the interaction between our own soul and the mitzvah and God that is actually happening when we do the mitzvah. And the Rebbe assures us that the fact that we don't feel it, the fact that we're not experiencing it, the fact that we are not sensitive to it, does not diminish the experience at all. In other words, in the objective reality, that connection is taking place, and the soul is benefiting from that intimacy and from that connection, even when we are unaware or unconscious of it. And that explains a rather mysterious or puzzling thing. God tells us not to work on Shabbos. God tells us not to eat leavened products on Pesach. And should we violate the commandment, work on Shabbos or Yom Tov, or eat chametz on Pesach, we are violating, we are destroying something very holy and divine, and therefore the sin is a serious violation. But how does this work? How does a person violate holiness? Obviously, you have to be in contact with that holiness to violate it. So it would seem logically that when God tells us not to violate the holiness of the holy day, whether it's Shabbos or Yom Tov, or not to eat a perfectly kosher food during the rest of the year, but on Pesach we can't eat it, it's leavened and not acceptable, because of the holiness, the unique holiness of the days of Pesach. Wouldn't it make sense that the holier person would be violating Shabbos or the holy day if he were to work on that day? A holy person would be violating the holiness of Pesach if he were to eat leavened products on Pesach. But the unholy Jew, who is not in touch with the holiness of the holy day or the holiness of Pesach, when he doesn't observe, when he works on Shabbos, what is he violating? He's not in touch with the holiness of the day, so how does his behavior violate that holiness? It's a good question. But here, from what the Rebbe is saying, we have a convincing answer. In reality, whether we are in touch or not, there is a godliness in our soul that does sense the holiness of the holy day. In other words, that holiness is present in our soul. And when we ignore it, when we violate it, we are damaging that holiness because we are in touch with it. So the fact that we don't feel, or the fact that we're not conscious, or the fact that we're not aware, doesn't change the reality of holiness. And that's why God commands us not to work on Shabbos, because the godliness of Shabbos is invested in our soul, and therefore our working on Shabbos directly transgresses or violates that holiness. That's why we are not allowed to eat leavened product on Pesach, because that particular holiness of Pesach is implanted in the Jewish soul, so that when a Jew eats the leavened product, he is violating that holiness. So the connection, the presence of godliness in our soul dictates or is the cause and the reason for the commandments that we are given, or for the prohibitions that we are given. In light of the presence of this kind of godliness, you have to behave a certain way. Where that godliness is not present, then there is no violation. So even the coarseness, the unholiness that keeps us from feeling and from appreciating and from even being conscious of the godliness that is there, all of that does not in any way diminish the significance and the truth and the reality of this godly condition that goes on with or without our awareness. And so it's true that God's love that he expresses in taking us out of Egypt causes our soul to respond to him, because you can't resist. It is the nature of the heart to reflect. And so we do have this reciprocal love. It is there, it's happening, it's going on in the soul, and what we need to do is simply invite it. And that, the Rebbe calls a love available to everyone equally, because our unholiness is not a detriment in this kind of love and does not diminish the love. On the contrary, it heightens the love, because the more I consider the distance between God and myself, the greater is the appreciation for God's loving me in my unholy condition, and therefore the greater is the reciprocal love that I will feel towards him. So this is available to all people equally. It's not that the holier person will have a greater love and the less holy person will have a lesser love, as in the earlier chapters where the Rebbe describes other kinds of love that are affected by how godly or ungodly our condition is. In this love, the ungodliness does not diminish the love at all. In fact, it enhances it. And secondly, it makes it not only available, not only very close, but very, very close to every individual, to be able to love God back by simply allowing God to love us. And this is what is meant when we say our God. Elokeinu, our God. What does it mean, our God? Certainly a person who is not devoting his life to serving God, a person who has not made godliness the center of his existence. What does it mean that when we make a blessing, we refer to God as our God? Elokeinu, our God. In view of what the Rebbe is saying, our God means the God who loves us. Not the God I love, but the God who loves me. Just as we say the God of Avraham, the God of Yitzchak, the God of Yaakov, there was an intimate connection, a personal connection between them. Every one of us can say the same thing when we say my God or our God. We're saying there is a connection that exists with or without my appreciation, with or without my knowledge. Because God initiates this relationship and the soul responds involuntarily. It loves back when it's loved. And so it's our God that we're talking about, even when I haven't consciously made God my purpose in life or the center of my universe and so on. Now the question is, God expressed this love when he took us out of Egypt. But how does that help me today to respond to God's love when the exodus from Egypt is something that happened a long time ago, and it happened in the spiritual because my soul existed there, my body did not. So how does it help me today in my earthy condition today? How does it help me love God when God's love was expressed a long time ago? In chapter 47, the Rebbe says, it is an obligation on every one of us to experience every day the exodus from Egypt. We are supposed to see ourselves as coming out of Egypt every single day. And what does this mean? It means that the soul finds itself exiled within the body. Because the body's interests, the body's tendencies are not compatible with those of the soul. So the soul finds itself displaced, out of its element, out of its natural environment. It's exiled within the body. Except for when the person is doing a mitzvah. When we are serving God, when we immerse ourselves in a mitzvah, then the soul finds itself in its natural element, and the body is, in a sense, in exile, because the body is doing something godly that is not natural to the body. Particularly, we experience this exodus, this release from exile or from imprisonment, when we say the Shema. We have a mitzvah to recite the Shema twice a day, morning and night. And the Shema basically says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Our God, the Lord our God. Every time the soul is permitted, is given the opportunity to say these words from Torah, quoting the words of Torah, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. In saying our God, the soul experiences an exodus from Egypt. Because exile, Egypt, means those things that constrain the soul, those things that get in the way of the soul's experiencing that closeness to God that makes him our God. So even though God exists and we believe in God, and with or without our interest, God is God, but he's not our God in our own experience unless we open ourselves up to that experience. So the saying of the Shema twice a day is the opportunity that the soul is given to experience that connectedness, to experience that oneness with God, that enables the soul to say, this is my God, or our God. Because of that connection that we described earlier, where God reaches out to the soul, and the soul can't help but respond. So chapter 47 is basically a detail, a further description of the love that is described in chapter 46. Chapter 46 says that every soul has a love for God that it experiences in response to God's love for the soul, and that that love was expressed in the Exodus when God took us out of Egypt. And every time we do a mitzvah, every time we serve God, we are in effect taking ourselves out of Egypt. And God is once again making himself available so that we can leave behind the unholiness of Egypt and go towards revelation, go to Mount Sinai, and again connect to God through the mitzvah and through the study of Torah. That's what chapter 46 basically established. Now in 47, the Rebbe is saying that in order to access that, in order to get in touch with that feeling, we need to re-experience the Exodus and see the Exodus as a constant, ongoing process and not something that happened a long time ago to our ancestors in ancient days. So the Exodus from Egypt is an experience that we need to have every day in order to re-experience that expression of love, or that initiation of love, the initiative of love that God expressed when he took us out of Egypt. Now, the contrast that makes this love more intense, the fact that God reaches out not to great people, or not only to great people, and not only to people when they're at their best, in their finest, in their nicest condition, but that he loves even when we are unworthy, and even when we are distasteful. That contrast is what makes this love available to everyone, regardless of their station, regardless of their wisdom or lack of, regardless of their religious feeling or lack of religious feeling. This unites all of us and helps us appreciate how godliness can be experienced not only easily and naturally, but that godliness can be experienced as a collective experience. It doesn't set me apart. It doesn't make me different. It doesn't make me unusual or special to connect to God in this way, because it is not out of virtue that I have this connection. It's by God's choice. And that's why when we are together, when we are truly one people, and when we see ourselves as interdependent, we cannot satisfy God's love, we cannot fulfill God's needs, if even one of us isn't doing their share, since that's what God wants. And so there's a unifying effect in that no matter how godly or ungodly an individual may be, no matter how talented or untalented an individual may be, how motivated or unmotivated, since this is a love initiated by God, and he is reaching out to us irrespective of our personal condition, therefore, all of us together, the highest and the lowest, the greatest and the smallest, the best and the worst, we all are the recipients of this love, and we all respond to this love in our inner soul, because our soul can't resist reacting or responding. But in order to reveal all of this, in order to have this become a conscious experience, we need only to welcome it. When we say the Shema, and everyone says the Shema equally, when we say the Shema and we say, "Hear, O Israel, God, our God," what we're basically saying is that we are not resisting. We are open and receptive to God being our God. And that's all it takes. It's not something we have to do or create. It's not something we have to produce in our heart or soul to where we have to become virtuous or saintly or godly. We need only to not refuse. Because in spite of the natural condition that a heart responds to a heart, and that if someone loves you, you can't help but loving back, even to the point where even if you're unconscious of their love, your heart responds anyway, instinctively, unconsciously, and finds itself loving this person and not knowing why. It is such a natural response. Yet, we can choose to refuse it. We can choose to block it out, to resist it. That's our freedom of choice. We are free in our choice to do things even against our nature. So although it is natural to love when being loved, we can get stubborn, we can become difficult, and refuse. Even in human relationships, there are children who don't love their parents in spite of the fact that the parents love them. This is unnatural, but it's a choice that human beings are capable of. So if we choose to refuse, if we choose to resist, we can resist even this most natural response, this most proper response. We can say, "I'm not interested. I don't want to be part of this." Not that that will change the inner reality. Even the person who says, "I don't want to love my parents," does on some level love their parents, because you can't help loving those who love you. And the same is true with God. Even those who choose to resist a relationship with God, to refuse an interest, to refuse any involvement in a relationship with God, internally, inwardly, there is a relationship going on. So what does it take to have this relationship be experienced even in the conscious world, on the surface world of emotion and heart and mind? All it takes is to not refuse. Let the natural relationship be welcome in your mind and heart, and it will be there. So, in this reciprocal love, we have the experience of revealing it and of tapping into it, not through contemplation of God's greatness, not through some kind of great wisdom that we have to acquire, but rather by simply permitting, by opening the door, by welcoming that relationship. We take it from the inner recesses of the heart, where it is taking place whether we know it or not, and we bring it to the conscious level of the heart, where we can actually make it ours on a conscious level. And that is the significance and the greatness of the saying of the Shema twice a day. When we say the Shema, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one," when we say "our God," we are opening the door. We're inviting the oneness, the connectedness that exists between the soul and God. We're inviting it into the revealed world. And this explains the use of the word "our God" when we're talking about commandments. God gave us a commandment, and we describe it as the commandment you, our God, gave us. because in the performance of the mitzvah, when we fulfill the commandment, we are connecting to the God that is already our God under the surface, inwardly, and we're bringing it out into the revealed part of the heart and mind. The fact that God is our God in his reaching out to us and allowing us to do the mitzvah, that brings us closer to him, to his thinking, to his will, to his want.